Welcome to the third edition of the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. First and foremost, I would like to thank our listeners. We have had over 500 independent downloads as of today. We have been contacted by some of you asking, you know, who the hell we are. So Greg and I decided it was time for an About Us episode. Unfortunately, Greg spent most of the time talking about himself, and it basically ended up being the Greg Eric podcast. But that's not a bad thing. He's an interesting guy. And we chatted about how he got into the business, about rebate programs, when he realized that LED was the future. It was a pretty good chat. So without further ado or bitterness, I give you the Greg Eric Get a Grip on Lighting podcast, ladies and gentlemen.
So, Greg, I'm going to say, gosh, we met 2008 at the Nailed Convention, right?
Yeah, that's right, in South Carolina.
Yeah. What was the name of that city where all the golfers go?
Hilton Head.
Hilton Head, yeah. Hilton Head, yeah. South Carolina, yeah. And how long had you been in the lighting game at that point?
In 2008, that would have been about 2.5 years.
So you, so 2.5 years, 2008. And so you bought it in 2005. You bought into Premier Lighting?
No, I started as a sales rep for Premier Lighting in 2005. July of 2005 is when I did that. Then I did it for about a year as a sales rep, maybe a little less, maybe 9 months, and then I started buying in as owner.
And how did that conversation with Angie start, or was that the plan from the beginning?
Well, it was the plan from the beginning. So I, my whole deal was I called it a quarter life crisis. You know, I'm a little on the positive side, thinking I was going to live to about 100. So at about age 25, I kind of went through and was seeing what I was doing and wasn't really enjoying the work. You know, since you spend so much time at work, you got to like what you do. And I thought the way that I could get into liking what I do is by, you know, having more ownership. I felt that I needed to have some ownership in a company. I didn't necessarily know what. I was surprised that there are people that actually sell light bulbs. You know, and when I heard it, the actual connection came through my dad, who is he was a CPA. He's retired now, but he did the tax work for Premier Lighting. So he wasn't an employee or anything, but he did all the tax work, you know, once a year, met with my partner now, Angie, and they put together, he did all the taxes, and then he had the connection. She was looking for someone, and that's kind of how I fit in the picture.
You were running around selling boxes of MR16s, light bulbs, fluorescent tubes, just running around slinging light bulbs.
Yeah, when I first started, I didn't even know what a light bulb was day one, obviously. And then there wasn't a lot of real good training sources. There were big, thick catalogs you could sort through. And what I would do is I started with just talking to people I knew. And the nice thing about lighting is that everybody has it and everybody needs it. I just went to everybody I knew that had a business, and, you know, as minor a connection as I could find, I'd go in there, even friends of mine where they worked, you know, just trying to get in touch with them, the person that would make the decision on the lighting. And then I would go around, ask questions. I would draw pictures of what the light bulb looked like. I'd write everything down that I could, and then I'd bring it back, and a couple employees at the time that were able to help me explain what it was and turn it into potentially ordering. But yeah, it was a lot of back and forth, a lot of learning on the fly for sure.
That's interesting you say drawing the pictures. You know, I used to go around with a Polaroid camera, like a legitimate Polaroid camera, and take pictures. Yeah, because back then, you know, there was no cell phones with cameras on it and stuff. So you had to take your film and get it developed. And then you had a picture like a week later. Like you didn't get to see it before you developed. Remember that? Anyway.
Yeah. I mean, well, I think digital cameras started coming out. And then I did have a digital camera for sure, too. So it wasn't even on your phone. You had your phone still, and you had a digital camera that you brought with.
Yeah, you're taking pictures of light bulbs.
That was a big advancement.
Yeah. So then you're running around, and you're taking training courses, and we basically went to the GE Nella Park lighting training like a week apart from each other, didn't we?
Yeah, I think so.
I think I did it in 2005 or maybe 6. I can't remember. But you went there too, didn't you?
Yeah, I was right around that time, maybe 6 or 7, somewhere in there. But that was the only real option I saw that would make sense to kind of get some lighting basic knowledge. Yeah, I did that for, I think it was a 3-day course.
Yeah, anyway, I was there for the weekend. And isn't it funny that both of us went to that? Like independently, yeah. Never met each other. We found that on the internet. What was it called? GE what? Light Center or Thomas Edison Center? What did they call that?
Lighting Science? I can't recall.
It had a cool name. I remember that. And then you went down to Sensor Switch in Wallingford, Connecticut, and they had their training course there. And we missed each other by about 3 weeks there too, if I remember correctly. I remember we talked about it early on, but I remember us, you know, being in Wallingford, Connecticut about 3 weeks apart as well.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy that that happened, but that was the only real sensor course that I knew about at the time. There was now there's a lot of online options, but at the time there wasn't really any.
You had to read books.
Yeah, you had to read catalogs, and you had to physically go to the facility or to the training center to learn from instructors.
Sure is a lot better now. Sure is a lot better now, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what's funny is that when you first met me, what did you think day one?
Oh, I couldn't stand you. Yeah, so we were at the I remember because we were at that Nailed. It was my first Nailed convention, and I didn't know anybody, you know, going into it. And I just went and sat in the back like I usually would, and flip flops and shorts and t-shirt. And I see a guy up in the front asking all the questions, you know, talking a lot, loud, wearing a suit and tie. Like, who's that guy? The thing I did notice was that the age, though, you were about the only person in that room that was around my age. So I was like, oh, maybe I should talk to him at some point, but I really don't like the way he acted.
And then what? So then we went out for that crazy dinner, and then the rest is history.
Yeah. It was either the first night or the second night. Went out and had a good time, and really learned who you were, and it worked out good for both of us.
And for sure.
Friends ever since.
Yeah, for sure, man. And so Pete Gray was at that dinner. Who else was there? Andrew Cowan?
Yeah. He was your employee at that point.
It was.
I don't recall who else.
Pete Gray was there, though, for sure.
Yeah.
I remember that. Yeah. Anyway, so then you're selling light bulbs. When did you start getting into... So I don't know if you remember at the time, but we spent a lot of... Was Angie at that conference, too?
The first one she was not at. I don't... No, not Hilton Head.
Right. So then we spent a lot of time talking about installation because I had already started Lighting Solutions by them, and it was a full-blown electrical contracting company. And at that point, were you already doing T8 high bay installs and T5 high bay installs, or were you just getting into it at that point?
It was probably on the beginning side of it. I feel like in 2007, maybe, you know, it took about a year to even figure out what I was doing and to figure out the industry and, you know, what a manufacturer is, what a manufacturer rep, all that process worked. It took me, honestly, a year. And then once I started figuring that out, I was able to, you know, start selling better and more. So I'd say right around that time is when I really started getting into selling the retrofits. And that was a big thing, was 400-watt metal halides to 6-lamp T8 or 4-lamp T5.
How many thousands and thousands and thousands do you think were responsible for removing you and I together? And how many tons of greenhouse gas emissions would that represent? Like, we're like environmental superstars, Amy and you, and we don't even know it. Like, you're talking thousands and thousands of halides I yanked out of buildings, dude.
Yeah, absolutely. Crazy thinking about it. I can't even do the math.
Yeah, I don't even know. I can't even begin to think about it. So when did it occur to you? At what point did you wake up in the morning and go, "This ain't about light bulbs anymore. This is about energy efficiency." When did that finally occur to you?
I remember getting training from a company called Paragon Lighting. They became Precision Paragon. They've been bought out, and now they're part of Hubble.
Were they up in Milwaukee or something like that?
They were out of Hudson, Wisconsin.
So Wisconsin, yeah.
St. Paul basically is 20 miles away.
And but Milwaukee's in Wisconsin, right?
Milwaukee is in Wisconsin.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, cool.
It's about $5 from me.
Okay, cool. So you went to Paragon.
Yeah, and that's really where I started learning, you know, it was all the fluorescent fixtures and reflectors and how they make a difference in lighting, and it wasn't necessarily lumens, but delivered light. So that was right before I went out to the first Nailed convention, so, you know, maybe late 2007. And then that's the time where I was like, okay, I went to a couple sites with who was the owner of Paragon at the time, and he really trained me, and the guy named Les Webster. Not in the business anymore, but yeah, I had a ton of, I learned a lot from him and was really able to go from there.
So when did things, so you guys have grown Premier quite substantially since you've been there. I know you've had a lot of success. At what point did you realize that the tradition, it was over for the traditional lighting industry? Like, you just, when did you realize this is done?
From, you're talking fluorescent, right?
No, for LED, like when did it occur to you that LEDs, it's just, there's no point in arguing this anymore. It's over. We got to switch everyone over to LED now. When did that hit you?
Yeah, you know, it's a good question. I've kind of thought off and on about when I saw the first LED, and I think that's kind of the starting point, obviously. And I remember it being a PAR 38 lamp, and I think from Eiko or somebody like that, and it weighed about 20 pounds, and it was metal fin, sharp. you know, you'd cut your hand if you tried to screw it in.
But yeah, the heat sink.
Yeah, so after seeing that, you know, I was like, well, this is interesting, but, you know, at a cost of over $100 and the weight that it was, I didn't see it really making sense. So you start listening, and then it starts coming out, you know, more and more and get advanced, and then all these screw-in lamps start turning into what the traditional light source looked like in terms of the actual physical look of it. But then the light output kept improving to the point where it was the same or better than what we were getting out of traditional. So the screw-ins really were the starting point.
And the then, was that first LED that you were looking at there, did you ever see any that were made in the USA?
I don't recall ever seeing that, no. I mean, I don't think it was even talked about initially.
You know what's funny? There used to be a LED lighting factory in Ontario. Really? And it was called CRS Electronics. It's gone now. But they started off making LED light retrofit kits for the back of school buses and stoplights at traffic lights and stuff like that, like red, yellow, and green.
Yeah.
And when everything started, I don't know, they started making an MR16 and they were charging like $100 for an MR16 and then eventually it went down to 55. They went public. And so I could see all their financial numbers and they were bleeding money everywhere. But they made some MR16s that I put in my house originally many years ago. And those are the best darn MR16s I've ever sold. They work.
Still work.
Yeah, they work great. They dim great. They haven't lost, you know, the L70 or whatever. They haven't lost much light. And all the other brands that I put into my house have burned out in some way or, you know, haven't worked as good as those ones, didn't dim as well and everything. But that company's gone. But they were made in Ontario, dude. It was awesome.
Yeah, it'd be nice to walk over there and get some.
Yeah, but unfortunately the place is gone now. But I mean, I don't know when did it occur to me? I think it really struck me when I really realized that it was over for traditional light sources. I'm not going to say the guy's name, but I think you're going to know who I'm talking about. We were talking to one of the guys at the Nailed convention, and we were, you know, already kind of starting to sell LED T8 tubes, you know, a couple here and there. And we were like talking about, it was all ballast bypass. There was no direct fit or it was driver and tube. And you and I had both done a few jobs, not many, but a couple. And one of the guys at the convention was talking about how low ballast factor with low watt T8 is better. And I just looked at him. I thought, no way, dude, that's done. I said, you know, you're not going to, as soon as you start going low watt, lower wattage 4 foot T8s and lower wattage ballasts past 25 watt, where are you going to go? I don't think you can get any more efficient with fluorescent. And I just thought that at the time. And I think, you know, a couple months later, we decided to go over to China. And check things out, you know.
Yeah, I was looking. I have my computer in front of me, looking back at documents, and the LED T8. So the screw-in started it for me, obviously, and for everybody. And then the T8 lamps. I did this document in August 27th, 2014, and it was all breaking down. You know, Type A, Type B, Type C, all these different lamps, and what the wattages and lumens are. It's funny to look at now what the pricing was back then, and the wattages, and how much they've improved since that time.
But yeah, you're looking at a 22 watt tube or something like that, right?
Yeah, it was around 20 watts and 1800 lumens or so, and, you know, $75 cost. And
it's crazy, eh? How much the price has gone down. Jason Bader was right on the first podcast when he said Moore's Law. It's so exactly like Moore's Law. It's just they're not calling it a computer, but really it's a piece of electronics, and it just keeps getting better and better and cheaper.
Yep. Yeah, and that with that, it's really taken off since, and it's still something I'm sorting out as a goal because there's new tweaks that come to the product, and it's confusing. I mean, with LED and the advancement of that, lighting has gotten, I think, more confusing than it ever was, and it was confusing to start.
Yeah, it's intentionally confusing, dude. Most people don't realize that the manufacturers, there's no NEMA standard for lighting. I mean, they tried to, do you remember the NEMA codes that used to be in the Sylvania catalog? Do you remember that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Remember, Sylvania was the only one that put a NEMA code on a lamp, and GE and Philips resisted it so much because they knew that if they put a NEMA code, everything would get commoditized.
Yep.
Right? So they knew that, okay, if we slap NEMA codes on all these bulbs, everybody's going to know that our PL-L32/41TTT is exactly the same as the GEF32, you know, DTT, whatever, right? They're going to know it. And yep. they live on people not knowing the difference.
Right.
for 100 years, they lived on that strategy, dude. Change the code and it's exactly the same thing. But anyway, knowing the difference is how we make money. But the question is, when did rebates real? What's the utility in Minnesota? The
one, the big Xcel Energy is a big one.
When did they start cranking out rebates?
They've had them since early 2000s, prior to me even starting in lighting. Maybe even the 90s. I know they had some in the 90s, but it's obviously changed quite a bit. It's getting changed every year. There's updates and things that switch, but I think it's probably been 20 years or more. Well, that math doesn't work out. 30 years, I guess.
When did they start funding like 50% of project costs? Because I don't know if it was always that way, but in Toronto, it started where they would give like 5 or 10% of a project cost or, you know, something like that. And then all of a sudden we watched it go from 10% of the project cost to, you know, being capped at 50% and stuff like that. When was that? Do you remember that transition or was it always high?
I think it was always high. If I remember back to when I started or on the higher side, I would say it started probably in the early 2000s, really when the T8 fluorescents started coming out and getting more advanced with the low ballast and the 28s and the 25s and the different options. That's when they really started to take off. But probably mid-2000s when they really got to the levels they're at now. And it's been, you know, pretty high and good since, where they'll do up to 60% of the cost.
And that includes, can you do like 100% of the material cost? Labor is another cost that's eligible too?
Yeah, it's material, labor, recycling. They will not take tax on it.
So. Yeah, well, your tax system's too complicated anyway.
It is, man.
It's in the land of the free and the home of the brave. Someone's going to shoot me at a convention if I make fun of the United States too much, eh? I'm a Canadian. Minnesotans are kind of like honorary Canadians anyway. So it was always like that. So for us, it kind of ramped up. It started off at about 10%. It kind of ramped up until, we would, as soon as a new incentive program would come out, we would mine it for quirks and stuff.
Yeah.
Where, I hate to say, am I saying this on the recording live? But we would look for areas where they overpriced a certain measure, because they would come out with like a prescriptive list. And they would still do. Yeah. And they put prices on things, but they don't really know what some of the stuff costs, right? You know, sometimes we can, we'll look at a rebate program and we'll switch what we're selling based on what the rebate program wants to incent.
I know, it's kind of crazy. And that's happened here too. And luckily the utility really takes our input, our being distributors like me in the area. They actually request pricing from us so they can get some idea of where the market's at.
You put that pricing high, right?
It's reasonable. Yeah. I'm not trying to.
I get it. I'm just joking.
Yeah. But they do. They have had rebates where it's more than the cost a lot of times. And, they figure it out and then they change it a few months later or a year later. But yeah, that definitely can change your strategy in selling when you look at something, because you're competing with a lot of different people and companies. So you need to know that.
Yeah, getting the highest rebate is part of the strategy.
It is, yeah.
It's part of the strategy. Like, we might cut this part out. I don't know if we should give people this information, but maybe we should. If you're smart enough to listen to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast, maybe you can learn something from us. The price of the prescriptive measure in that program determined which measures were chosen, not what was best for the client. And I'm uncomfortable with that in some rebate programs. I think they should just do it by the watts, the amount of watts or kilowatts you're able to save. I think the prescriptive measures get them into trouble.
I agree. And I've shared that opinion with the utilities I work with, is that, and it puts more, burden in the way on them, because they have to calculate it, or they just, have to trust the calculations that the people selling it are doing. But that makes the most sense, is because you don't want to, we can get rebates on not saving energy.
The bottom line is that, I've run into measures where there actually is no energy savings, or they're paying significant amounts more than they would pay if it was just a wattage analysis of it. I don't want my projects influenced that way. I don't know how you feel, but I feel like I'd rather just give my client what I think is the best and get them the best rebate.
Yeah, and that's the hard part that we're put in, is that the competition, and to touch on that, is there's a lot of people that can sell lighting and a lot of people that do. And there's people that pop up and, take advantage of these rebate programs, learn how to do it, to some degree, and sell lighting that's not necessarily the right lighting for that customer. It's a short-term win for them, but then a long-term pain for the customer. I try not to get into that, because we're planning to be in business for a long time, and we're always going to be around. So we always look for, our whole motto at Premier Lighting is to find the optimal and practical lighting system. So we keep cost in mind, but we also are looking for the best system. And that's not to plug me, but I'm just saying, you know, as a lighting company, that's what you should look for when you're making a lighting decision, or really any decision. That's what I feel is important.
Well, I think the first thing to do is join the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors, Greg, and come down and see us, and we'll tell you how it works.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
if you're new to the business, or you just got into the LED game a couple years ago, and you're listening to two guys that have been in the game for a long time, but, you know, we're not that old either. I started in this business when I was 21 years old. I'm 39 now. We have a lot of knowledge between the two of us, and I believe in me, and I believe in Greg Eric. I wouldn't want to compete against him in the same market, but it might happen one day. Who knows? But I believe in him as a lighting guy, and I think he believes in me as a lighting guy. And so if you're listening to this podcast, you should join Nailed and Meet Us, and you should also continue listening to this podcast, because there's two guys on here that have been in this business a long time that have sold a lot of light bulbs. You know, we saw the transition from T12 to T8. We saw the transition. I even caught the tail end of the CFL revolution. I was kind of in the game when people were still, like, apartment buildings would still have 60-watt A19s in their stairs and stuff like that, Greg?
Yeah, I was still mid-2000s. I definitely had that going on.
You were running into that in Minneapolis in the mid-2000s?
Oh, for sure, yeah. Yeah, we were still selling incandescent to CFL probably until the LEDs came around, which was, you know, 2013, 14.
No, but come on. People were using incandescents, like, in hallways that are on 24/7? Yeah. Come on, dude. Really?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Like, that's so crazy.
It is, yeah.
Like most people, okay, here's, I'm going to give you guys a metric if you're not in lighting or whatever. It's at least $1 a watt. So if you run a 60-watt light bulb 24/7 in a hallway, it's at least $1 for every watt in energy. Would you agree, Greg?
Yeah, I would say so.
I mean, I don't know what it is in your market, and everyone's got different electricity prices in different states and provinces, but it's got to be a buck Canadian a watt there. How's that? So 70 cents, Greg.
That makes more sense.
Yeah, there you go. So like 70 cents a watt, yeah. Right? That's what it's costing you to run that thing. And people still do this, dude. I can't believe it. Can you?
No, it is crazy. Like with the energy savings you can get from all these LED lighting options, that people still have incandescents. They still have fluorescent. The fluorescent lamp costs more than an LED after the rebate. And we still have people buying screwing fluorescents.
Well, yeah, so your customers are, you know, still, so you still have your distribution end where you don't question people. You let them buy whatever they want.
We always talk to them about it, but yeah, we'll sell them obviously whatever. But I would say anytime we come across it, we say, well, do you want to consider this? And some people do, and a lot don't still.
Yeah, I still have people that literally don't believe that if you reduce wattage, your energy bill will go down. Have you ever done like a post-project analysis of anybody's energy bills, Greg?
Yeah, I've had people that have, you know, called in and asked about it, and we've analyzed it. Not a real in-depth study, but, you know, look at a month from the year before and a month from the year after the retrofit. Done that.
So here, I'll tell you a story. So I had a customer that I went in to see him, and it was a middle-sized mall. So not like, you know, the big mall in Minneapolis, but maybe one in between a strip mall and a really big mall, right? So it was a large lighting job, and it was going to be metal halide and HPS. They had HPS in this mall. To the high watt CFLs. Remember that? Mm-hmm. Did you ever do that?
Yeah, we did.
So it was like tons of those, and then there was a bunch of fluorescent T12 fixtures, and it was a huge job. Not huge by lighting standards. So it was probably over $200,000. So pretty big lighting job, right? So I told the guy he was going to save this much, the incentive was going to be this much, and all that sort of stuff, right? He looks at me and goes, oh yeah, we're going to save energy every month? I said, yeah. He goes, and I'm going to get this much of an incentive? I said, yeah. And he said, well, I'll give you 50% of the energy savings and 50% of the incentive, and you go ahead and retrofit my mall.
Yeah.
And I said, well, how many months do I get it for? He goes, we can negotiate the months, but you have to prove to me every month that I've saved the energy I'm going to save, and I'll pay you.
So what'd you do?
So I said, okay, give me 5 years of hydro bills. So you know, we got 5 years, actually three different meters on the mall too, right? So we got, I don't know what it was, this huge stack of paper. And I told, do you remember my guy that used to work for me, Young Feng?
Yeah.
Yeah, so he was like Excel wizard. He was awesome. He went through the whole thing, and we plotted all the energy into Excel. And he did this like program where he could do it really fast. Like he wrote like macros in Excel or whatever. So he got really good at doing it. Mm-hmm. So he plotted it all. And I noticed a lot of trends. Like I could see how they used energy. And I could see that based on my thorough counting of all the lighting in the entire mall, that lighting represented like 70% of their energy consumption, right? And if I was going to cut it by 50%, that was going to show up for sure. And I would take 50% of that over 36 months, thank you very much, plus half the incentive.
Yeah.
Whatever I could prove. So I presented this document to him with all his backup. He took it to his guy. His guy went through it and we cut a deal on that. And I ended up making a lot more on the job, just I had to wait for it every month. And he got proved his energy savings.
Nice.
Yeah. And I showed him every month and it was real, dude. You could see it. And if you really get into plotting it in a really, if you get into plotting it, you can even factor in like increased costs of energy into it. Mm-hmm. And then the savings gets even bigger. And we argued about that one.
Yeah.
I said to him, I said, hey man, you know what? The energy cost is 2 cents more a kilowatt hour. So it's not, you don't get the same payment every month. It was 50% of the cost of the energy savings. Mm-hmm. And so when the energy cost goes up, I get more. We had a bit of an argument on that, but he backed down and paid. And I've done that on a few occasions with some other customers. And but you got to be careful with certain kinds of facilities. You want to make sure the facility has a huge lighting load. If they're like a warehousing, you know, a third-party logistics warehouse, they're going to be heavy on lighting.
Yep. Yeah, because the hard part on a utility bill is knowing what percentage is LED or is lighting. How the temperature swings can be HVAC's part of your utility bill.
If you plot it. So yeah, so Minnesota's Minnesota is a four-season place like Ontario, right?
Yep.
So in Arizona, you can see the air conditioning load. It's like a base hum right on their hydro bill, I bet. If you went to Arizona and looked at some hydro bills, you'd probably see like this big burst in the summer and then a slow, you know, curve. If you plotted it over 5 years, you would see like this trend where in the summer it went up and in the winter it went down because there's so much cooling going on in those buildings in the summer, but it would be smooth. You know what I'm saying? Whereas in Ontario, it drops off because most people at the end of the summer turn off their AC. Well, they turn them off, except for some really big buildings, but they turn them down or they turn them off, and then they go to gas on their heating.
Yep.
Is it the same in Minnesota, or would people have a lot of electrical heat? I don't think they would have a lot of electrical heat, would they?
Oh, they still do, but the gas is more popular.
Yeah. So then you can see it right away. You can the summer just becomes clear, and you can capture that lighting load, especially in a building that's got a lot of commercial lights and stuff. You can do that. But anyway, maybe you won't want to do that. Depends if you're confident that you can give your customers, really keep your promises of energy savings to them, if you got the balls to do it that way. Right. I don't know, Greg, what do you think? You going to go for it?
No, I'm not.
It's a tough one, man. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. Yeah. I haven't done it in a while. I did it, so I've seen the energy savings, and I plotted it and proved it to at least half a dozen companies that wanted to do it that way. And so I think a lot of people need to buy into this that are not, if you don't believe the energy savings, you're making a mistake, but you want to get with somebody that's honest and knows what they're talking about, like Greg Eric or Michael Colligan or someone, you know, like that, that knows lighting, that knows how lighting works, that knows what ballast watts are different from, you know, fluorescent watts and whatever. I mean, that's the key. If people go around screwing a lot of customers, we sabotage the whole industry, Greg.
We do. Yep, absolutely. And that does happen right now, unfortunately, you know, with a lot of the fly-by-night companies that come in and take advantage of the rebates and then move out.
You know, it's funny because you look at some of the early gas station LED lighting retrofits.
Oh, they're horrible. Oh. I was at one last night. Oh. And it was black almost. The LED itself was black. And he did it 2 years ago with the company that gave him a great price, imported it from China, and he can't get a hold of them now.
Yeah. Yeah, they're not in business since 1977 like we are.
Right.
you know, it's hilarious. I remember this one guy, been doing business with him on, you know, all through T8 and T5. He's like, I have so many quotes now for this LED job. I want to go with you, but you're higher. So I said, okay, show me your best quote. The guy spelled energy savings wrong. I can't remember. Like he didn't know how to spell wattage. You know, just like things like this. I'm looking at the guy going, buddy, read this for me, please. Stop looking right to the bottom where it says a number and read what's written here and see if you can make any sense of it because I can't.
Right.
You know, I'm serious, man. I mean, in Toronto, you can't swing a dead cat without hitting a LED lighting store now. And everybody's an expert in those stores.
Oh, yeah. Got to be.
You know?
Yeah, that's the hard part is you, you can't really be an expert in lighting unless you know what was there.
Oh, unless you join the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I mean, they don't have any perspective on the industry. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Yeah. So regionally specific. Do you have any dreams of going coast to coast, Greg?
You know, we do some already with our website. We've gotten quite a bit of growth from that. But so we do supply lighting all over the country. But, you know, majority of it is in our region here, 5-state region.
But you're drop shipping stuff when you're doing the web stuff, right?
Not necessarily. I mean,
you're shipping out of Minnesota?
Yeah, sometimes. We'll keep it in stock here and then we'll send it here. It depends on what the order is and the manufacturer and their policies.
Do you think we're going to get any pressure from Amazon or eBay?
You know, that's been talked about. I don't know. I see that it's out there, but a lot of times what Amazon is selling to is a residential market. I know they've talked about trying to get into the commercial side, but it's a tough deal to get into. You can't, you know, lighting, you a lot of times need to be on site and you need somebody that knows what they're talking about to be able to sell it to you. And just to be able to put it through Amazon, I don't know that it will ever get to a point where it really threatens our business a lot.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you. I think lighting is a regional business. I think it's going to have a hard time. I mean, we had a couple national companies in Canada that mm-hmm. have, you know, boom and bust a little bit. There's a couple and we got some pressure from them, but eventually it faded, you know, and we weathered that storm, you know. Oh, you know, they come in. There's so many companies, I'll tell you right now, Greg, in Toronto and Ontario, that if they cancel the rebate program, bankruptcy tomorrow.
Yeah, you're right.
Day after, bankruptcy. Yep. I can start reeling them off in my, like, one after the other after the other. I'll still be around. How about you?
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. That's why you have a distributorship base, you know, and you know lighting. If you're just chasing rebates, that's a more of a short-term plan.
Well, we are chasing rebates at the same time.
But if you just chase rebates.
Well, that's what most of the new players in the game are. They're rebate chasers. That's absolutely. It. They have no business. They may have a little unit somewhere where they have some stock, but they have no, you know, in a balance sheet, when you're looking at buying a company or something like that, you see on a balance sheet, you see goodwill and there's a price beside it. They have no goodwill.
No. And they, a lot of times, don't have a facility. They work it out of their house. And
hey, you look, there's a lot of nailed members that started that way. So let's not get too hard on the startups, eh?
You're right. I mean, you're right.
You got to get started somewhere. But what I'm saying is that when you're up against me, how can you look at a company that has no goodwill on their balance sheet and compare them to the same? Like, these guys have nothing to lose, dude.
Right.
They have no reputation. Not doing some podcast. I have a reputation to uphold.
Absolutely.
You know, and I'm not going to back it out because of there's no rebate program or whatever. These guys are going to disappear as soon as the rebate program is gone and their products didn't turn out to last the way they were told by the Chinese manufacturer, right?
Right.
They're gone.
Right. Yep.
They're gone. We're still going to be in the game. So, I mean, you know, this is what the podcast is about, ladies and gentlemen. There's our about us. It's about dudes that know lighting, chatting and talking and doing some issues. On the next episode, you know what I was talking, and just to give everybody a little glimpse of what's coming, I was talking to that guy, Christian Monrad. Remember him?
Yep.
I think he was saying that the International Dark Sky Association calls all the street lighting upgrades a disaster.
Yeah.
I don't know. Don't quote me on this, folks. I don't know if disaster was the word they used. And we're going to bring on Christian Monrad to tell us a little bit more about, you know, some of the mistakes that have been made. And I'm not going to give any more information because if you don't know really what I just said, you're going to need to tune in next time to get more.
There you go.
Is that right? What do you think, Greg? Yeah. We done?
I think that's great. And one correction is the section is actually called About Us.
Oh, is it?
About.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So for all the
and we, you know, and Czech is spelled Q-U-E, Greg, not C-K.
C-K.
Hey, Matt, can you come on the horn here on the recording for a second? Just come right in on the recording.
Yes, sir. I'm here, sir.
Okay, because Greg and I have promised we're going to do this from now on. What's the higher status vehicle, Matt? Is it the GMC XLT Denali or is it the Chevrolet Suburban LTZ?
The Suburban, for sure.
Thank you very much, Matt.
Matt, are you Canadian?
I am.
Okay, that answers it.
Okay, good. All right, Greg, talk to you, buddy.
Yep, see you guys.